Dude, Peter Pan Dam. Peter Pan Pan TBD Dagger.
BBD Dagger.
BBD Dagger. PBD moment of
brilliance.
And it was a moment. It was a moment of brilliance for him yesterday.
What?
At the Nouns Esports. Dude, yesterday. So, context for the fuckers listening to this. I went to, on a Wednesday in LA, there was a series of Melee show matches hosted by Nouns, which is like a crypto DAO. And
it's like Moondao from Dude Perfect.
Yeah. And
thanks Moondao for sending Dude Perfect to space.
And I thought I was going to a Melee tournament, basically. Like, I thought I was going to be able to sit like in a studio and be at something akin to Summit and like work there and hang out for the day.
Yeah.
I show up. It's more like one of those like warehouses that's been turned into like a brewery that's like half outside, half inside sort of vibe.
Oh my God. Yeah. You sent the picture of the Steve Caballero.
Yeah. I walked in and I get there and it's kind of weird at first because there's not a lot of people I recognize as like Melee fans or players initially. But I was like, oh, I forgot this is like a broader like crypto community event. Like, or maybe they have crypto people gathering for this. Walk in, first thing I see is on a stage at the end of the outside area, Bob Burnquist giving like a fucking TED Talk.
Who is a pro skateboarder who was in Tony Hawk 1.
Tony Hawk 1? Tony Hawk 2?
He's in most of the Tony
Hawks. He's in most of the Tony
Hawks. But just to be clear, Tony Hawk 1 dates him precisely.
He
like rings on a tree.
He didn't exist before, much like Waluigi until Mario Tennis on the N64, Bob Burnquist didn't exist until Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1.
Yeah.
And many people don't know that.
He was handcrafted.
Yeah.
By Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk molded him in a lab.
Molded him as a man.
What if this
like
was a
Adam.
Tall skater you could pick in my game? And then he's going to become a real human being who built a mega ramp in his backyard.
And then and now he's on some Bored Ape shit.
And now he's on a little bit of Bored Ape shit. But I was like, oh my God, like what is going on at this event? This is so strange. And then I go in further in, there's a Melee tournament going on, people playing show matches and all that stuff. And I get to meet for the first time in person, like have a conversation with them. Peter Dagger.
But guys, when COVID hit, we all worked at Beyond the Summit still. And we had to like do shifts as audio on this late night ESL broadcast.
Yep.
Cause it was the only work the studio had at the time. And everyone just like chipped in and I honestly liked it. I liked driving in and fucking working the graveyard, but that ESL event, it was a Dota event, had this ad run. It was Moments of Brilliance brought to you by Intel, and we burned into our memory because we had to watch it probably 600 times, was an ad where Peter Pan Dam, the Dota player, says, I'm Peter PPD Dagger, and this is my Moment of Brilliance.
Yeah.
And then he talks about a game in gameplay.
That might be the ad that I've seen the most in my life.
Yes.
Tied with the ad that would play immediately after, which was the ad for the ESL merch shop where
you love
two
it,
people
you wear it.
Two people in Europe ran across a bridge together in like ESL hoodies.
Loving it and wearing it.
You have to love it. You love it.
You wear
it.
And also the Mountain Dew Amped commercial with that girl. Bro, I was in love.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah, she had like a big, she was like a gamer girl and she had a big like thunder hammer.
And she was gaming.
Oh my God. She was, if you're out there.
I hate, this is a small tangent. Makes me furious when I see like a gamer themed like Xfinity ad for Comcast. And they're like, we got the fastest speeds. It's like
the fastest
download. It's like, what about the ping, Comcast? I don't get, speed doesn't need to be that high.
Can you tell me what the ping to Chicago
is? Can you tell me what the stability is, Spectrum? Internet go out?
Can you tell me what the US 1 Riot server comes back as? Packet?
Send
round trip?
The next round of like Xfinity fucking fiber ads on Twitch are just like a little video, like a handheld video of a guy like ping testing the league server.
Yeah.
And be like, See, rock solid, like just low.
I'm in Texas right now, so that's pretty.
It's good. Like pretty good. And that, dude, they'll get so many subscriptions.
Yeah, it'd be insane.
24-hour live stream just showing that the ping doesn't like spike or no it's packet loss.
Just real consistent, real low.
Instant customer, you have me. So I brought this up with Peter PPP D.
Peter Pander Dagger.
And Peter picked a pipe of daggers. and he's like, yeah, it's the meme. Like, yeah, I know.
Oh, wait,
and
he gets into Mona Brilliance?
Everybody makes jokes about this,
no
apparently.
No shit.
At least in Dota, like, people know about this. But he explained to me a bit of lore about it that I did not know,
really?
That I thought was really, really funny. So this was an ad campaign that they were reaching out to Dota players to shoot before COVID.
Yes.
And he was the first and only person they got to shoot the ad with.
There was going
to
be
before
more.
The pandemic happened.
Oh, there was going to be
and
more.
And he was going to be one of 10 people that they had
my
a version
God.
Of this ad, and the pieces are coming together. And he's like, yeah. So the reason you only saw me on every ad break is because of the pandemic. And they were supposed to have like a variety of players.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the same fucking ad all the time.
That is so fucking funny, dude. Oh my God.
And he was like, I accepted like way lower pay for this gig because I was like one of the 10 people. And I'm like, you guys are using my likeness for every tournament hundreds of times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you might as well get 10x for that.
Yeah. It was just very funny to hear that from him, because I was like, oh, that makes so much sense.
That's why.
And why they were just shooting showing the same Peter ad over and over and over.
He's Peter PPD Dagger, and this is his moment of brilliance.
His moment of brilliance, dude. And now he fucking watches Smash. You'll see him in chats of like 150 viewer Smash locals.
He's saying, let's go, Aklo.
He is. But at like nightclub winners quarters.
Nightclub winners quarters. He's saying, you got this against Lewis.
Yeah. Oh.
Let's go.
Damn, really cleaned it up against Lewis. Oh, shit. To Artens on next?
You better watch out for E-Poodle. He's going to get you.
Up and comer.
What's up, guys? Welcome again back to the Advice Show. This is Radio Free Advice, and I'm going to play our theme song.
What?
Yup.
What?
They can't get us here, bro. The DMCA bots.
What?
You like this shit, Aiden?
What?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Hit it. 1, 2, 3, 4.
What?
Oh, there's more.
What?
You guys
dude,
know
no
this
way.
Song?
Oh, I know this.
Here we go. Drop that shit.
Fuck. I just want to
hear
the beginning.
It takes so long.
The beginning is so funny. I walk up in the club.
Oh, hold on.
Why don't they just say pop?
Yeah, why don't they?
This is really
awesome. That's a kids bop version
dude,
of Fish Up.
I specifically, this evokes such a strong memory. I was in fourth grade, and the teacher in gym class would play kids bop. And even in fourth grade, I wanted to end my life.
You're like, this is not for me, and this sucks.
And
my mom doesn't let me play T-rated games.
Dude, and my mom doesn't let me play T-rated games. And he would play this fucking version of, what's like the most popular Weezer song? Why can I not think of the name?
Say It Ain't So.
Yeah, really?
Say It Ain't So, or Island in the Sun.
Am I just thinking of a
Buddy
different
Holly.
Song? No. Oh, Beverly Hills.
Oh,
I'm thinking
yeah,
of Beverly
yeah,
Hills.
Yeah.
So he would play the Kids Bop version of Beverly Hills by Weezer
disgusting.
In fourth grade gym class. And I was so, because this was a song that I could listen to with my overprotective parents.
Yeah, it was okay.
And he said in the real Weezer song, they say, my automobile is a piece of crap. And in the Kids Bop song, they change crap to junk.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Fourth grade me, it made fourth grade me like unfathomably angry.
No, I feel that.
And I was
get
complaining
that.
About it in gym class. I was like, why do they change? The real word is just crap. Why don't they say crap? And then I got in trouble in gym class.
Because you were hollering about crap and junk.
He doesn't even say shit.
Dude, crap is such a gateway drug to swearing.
It actually is.
If you're 10, crap is like a little bad.
But it was.
It's
my
not,
mom
it's
wouldn't,
not hell
see,
and it's not damn.
I could listen to it in the song, but my mom wouldn't let me say crap.
No shit.
Dead ass.
She is so beautiful.
I know. She had a lot of, there was a lot of rules back then.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, now my brother's getting beers with my family in Hong Kong.
He's getting fucking beers in Hong Kong. He's got hoes on speed dial. He's gonna pop some tags.
He just broke up with his girlfriend, so.
Oh, let's go, bro. life is but so beautiful.
He's about to do some college tours, and I got a cute message from him today, because he's so much younger than me. And he's also in high school still. So, we don't get to do a lot together. He goes to, a boarding school in Canada. He hit me up. He's like, I'm coming to L.A. to do, a college tour. Can you come with me?
Oh.
And I was like, that's cute, man.
Yeah, I'll come with you, bro. I'll show you the fucking ropes, dude.
Yeah.
I'll show you how to pop some tags.
Whoa.
I mean, rock some tags. Still...
You better rock the tags,
he's
brother.
He's still in high school.
You better fucking rock the tags, brother.
20 questions in my pocket. I'm gonna give some advice to Eamon. Kill yourself this morning. I don't know. What do you got, bro? What do you got
for
me?
Yeah, fucking, okay, well.
Let me change people's lives.
I hate when I have a tough one.
Oh.
Maybe I pick something different.
It's a tough one?
Dude.
We're good at tough ones. We're smart.
This one is just...
You look pained
I didn't realize that this one was gonna pop up first when I...
Well, I mean, we don't have to. You're the guy.
It's just sad.
Okay. It's sad?
It's...
Do you want to do a different one?
They'll never know. No, I just need to say the opening to myself one more time. come up.
Bam, 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 bam.
So, the title is, How Do I Come to Terms with My Friend's Sudden Violent Death and Make Peace with Him Letting Go?
Jesus Christ. All right, let's do this.
Anonymous 21. Hi guys, about 6 months ago, my friend died incredibly unexpectedly in a car crash. It was a one-person accident late at night. He was driving back to his house to play poker with our friend group when something weird happened with his car. His parents are currently in the process of suing the manufacturers, which led to him hitting a pole and the car exploding.
Jesus Christ.
This was, of course, unimaginably difficult for me and all of his friends. He was a fantastic human being, the kind of guy who really made us all feel loved and cared about, who wouldn't hesitate to make a sacrifice to make the people around him happier. Although we were both the same age, I looked up to him and admired him greatly. The last text exchange I ever had with him was me telling him how much I loved him and appreciated how kind he always was. My friends and I have all gone through the 5 stages of immediate grief together and are coming out on the other side okay. One of the things that helped me the most initially after the accident occurred was a pact I made with myself to at least once every day think about him and a memory we had together and try to show kindness to others in the same way he did. Fuck, man, you're gonna make me cry. This gave me a sense that he was somehow still here, that he was alive through his impact on me. Oh, Jesus, man. And on the other people in his life. But I'm beginning to notice thinking less and less of him as time goes on. Initially, that was a good thing. It's nice to not be in a constant state of anguish and pain, but as time goes on, it feels like he's dying all over again, and there's nothing I can do to keep him alive. I have no idea what to do about this sense of guilt and pain, especially because I've recently graduated from college and moved away from all of the friends I experienced this with. I've thought about reaching out to his family to see if there's any memories or stories I could share with them or ways I could help with anything, but am afraid of putting another burden on a group of people who have already experienced an unimaginable trauma. Therapy hasn't helped either, as it has been very difficult for me to put into words what I am feeling or why I am feeling it. I don't know if the solution is to just accept that he's gone and let him go, or try even harder to keep him alive the more time passes. Both options seem equally as painful and difficult. I know this is intense for a group of Melee players to answer, but I guess a more simple version of my question is this. How do I keep honoring my friend's legacy the further and further away I get from his death and stop myself from feeling guilty for continuing to live life without him?
I'm going to be a little hard on you right now because I think you literally typing out as words, between God and us and all of our friends and saying, I don't know if the solution is just to accept that he's dead, is like, that is the solution. You know that. There is something that is keeping you obsessed with the idea of his death. And that's normal. I think death is such a strange and hardcore thing to have to survive, right? When you talk about those who survive, like family members, friends, and stuff like that. And you are, there is something that you particularly are scared of about yourself and your life that you are using this tragedy to express in a way, healthily or unhealthily. Because genuinely, if you really think about it, if you logically put this on paper, even if you don't think about your friend every day, it doesn't mean he's gone. It doesn't mean his memory is just going to wither. He made an impact on you. You carry with you all the things that he taught you and impacted you with. You carry that with you, whether you like it or not. And that's kind of a beautiful thing. He lives on in you and you guys and all the people he touched, right? So you're thinking that if you don't think about him, something is wrong, doesn't actually have to do with him. It has to do with something you are unwilling to accept about the concept of death or yourself or some sort of insecurity. That is my surface level understanding. And I'm saying this as from a vantage point of someone who's dealt with death. Honestly, kind of a lot. I wouldn't say a lot of friends. I have friends that have died. My best friend, my childhood best friend died. He died, he was 32. I went to his funeral during COVID. It was 2021, I forget. I hadn't talked to him in 10 years, but he meant so much to me as a kid, and he's just gone. And every time it's his birthday, because we were born 5 days apart, I think about him. I do something, you know? Do I think about it every day? No, but when I think about, sometimes he'll just come up, and it's a good feeling, and it's natural, and it's normal. That is, I believe, the proper way after a long grieving period to handle death and the thoughts of those who have passed is naturally, because it's always going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot at the beginning, and it's going to hurt less as time goes on. But you can't be obsessed, because that's no life, you know? That's what my initial... So it might sound like I'm being a little hard on you, but there's something going wrong. There's a gear missing in your head right now. You got to find that gear.
I thought that was a great answer.
Yeah. I know people have died around me a lot.
Yeah. I know. I think I am poorly equipped to answer this question. I think this is I don't know if I process like death very well or
you had that friend that died, that melee guy.
Yeah.
I remember that. I remember because you typed about it in our Discord and you talked about how it made you feel and I remember telling you, I think you were upset about the idea that you haven't talked to him in a long time and now he's gone and that you can't. And I remember what I told you was that you're the kind of guy that like, even if you meet you for a little bit, you make a positive impact, and that's someone I strive to be. And fail at a lot of times, I'll admit. But I don't think you're poorly equipped. I think you expressing what you said in the Discord when that happened was very healthy.
Mm.
And you carried it with you well, and you felt this pain, this grief that's so natural for us. And now I'm sure you think about him every now and then.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually sent a message about him like 30 minutes before you got here.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he was from your region, right?
Yes, from Bellingham, Washington. Yeah, he just... I don't know. Yeah, he just died. Like, he's 35. He was 26 when I met him, and I was 16. Yeah. And I went to his apartment to play Melee because I... hit up the Facebook group, and he taught me how to Falco Pillar.
Yes, sir.
And he's very encouraging. Invited me to like a Smash Fest that was happening that weekend. And that was the first fest I went to with like a bunch of college guys and like watching people play for the first time and just seeing like, wow, they're so good and they're so fast. Like, wow. Like watching Sheik like fucking wave dash back to ledge and then back air was like, dude,
how so
did
fast.
How did he do that?
So like, buttery.
I think the reason that I feel so ill-equipped is like, I feel like I'm a little fake, and like, you know, he like dealing with his death is weird because also because of that removal, because like we haven't been like close in a long time, and so the emotion felt very disconnected, I would say.
Yeah,
and
you haven't had a big one.
And then my mom died when I was like one, you know, so I fucking dodged that more or less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's some sadness there, but it manifests in like very different ways than I think like losing a family member normally would. And then I think the closest thing is like my youngest. So I've like, because of the way my family works, I have six grandparents, and the first one died a few years ago, and she was the youngest of them by like a pretty large margin. And that was the first like close family member who passed away. And I think I have dealt with things by just not focusing on them, to be honest. Like I shove that down and like don't think about it very much. And
super normal. I've always said there's no wrong way to grieve, really. As long as you're not like, you know, hurting someone else or something. But it's you go at your own pace. It's just such a final thing, right? That's why there's someone on the subreddit literally today was like, my dad died. I am now the dead dad club, and it's sort of like a post about that.
Yeah.
And all I said was, take your time, take all the time you need. That's really all you can do.
Yeah.
I remember my dad died. I had in my Twitch description, it said, I am streaming to get rich one day, or I'm on the yard. One day I will be able to buy my dad a house.
Yeah.
And people would message me and be like, hey, just so you know, it still says that. And I'm like, dude, kill yourself.
Yeah.
Wait, like, because basically I wasn't ready to remove that.
Yeah.
And you are telling me how to grieve.
Yeah.
And it's an insane overstep. Yeah. But, you know, that's just kind of what you got to deal with.
Yeah.
So it's tough. But I think, you know, I haven't told anybody this, but I had a friend I grew up with, I played Melee with. He was across the street. It wasn't my childhood best friend. He's like later on in life. I hung out at his house. I knew his family. We hung out all the time. We played Melee. It was, you know, for better or for worse, he was one of my best friends because he's my neighbor. I found out in May, he killed himself. He had three kids, and he killed himself, and his mom tried to get a hold of me. She did. I called her. She told me about it. I haven't talked to him again in like 10 years. And for one, older people are so weird about death. She literally was like, yeah, he lost the battle. It was so callous. His mom's a really nice person.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is fucked up. My dad's friends, they would talk the same way about it. I don't know. Maybe it's like a coping thing. Beside the point, I was like, she's like, do you think you can make the funeral? It's in Colorado. I'm like, yes, I can. I missed it. I put it on my calendar, didn't acknowledge it, forgot about it, got my weeks messed up. I missed the funeral. And I think about that all the time. So that is to tell you, anyone out there listening, or the person that submitted this, make those moments count, because you don't get to reschedule a funeral, right?
No.
It is a paying respects. It's a send-off.
Yeah.
Shit like that, man. You gotta go to. Just that is what will make you feel better later on to say, you know what? I attended that celebration of life or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've done all this, guy in the chat listening. You've done all the things. You've done so much and you've done enough. It's not about him anymore. Whatever you're dealing with, it's about you. And I think that he wouldn't want you to be using his death as some sort of vehicle to be sad, right? So that is, that's my advice. And you'll be okay.
Good advice.
Because you gotta be.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry about your friend. And I hope, I hope things just be good.
You know, I got a lot funnier after my dad died, so you have that to look forward to. You should be looking forward to that.
Get your funny up is the real TLDR.
Get your funny up and or your money up.
The next question. This is a pretty like basic question, but I don't recall talking about it on the show.
Can I real quick today? I want you to know, I took a dump that had such like a rich smell, like a really like heavy
rich,
like rich smell, like a rich thick. You know what I'm trying to say?
Like a manure in the garden smell?
No, like rich,
like it has some like moist.
You know how you like eat it like a creamy pasta dish?
Yeah,
and it like it's just so rich, right?
Yeah.
It's like a That's
what you did?
It was such a...
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway.
Here in the office?
No, in my home.
Okay, that's better. That's better. I did it today.
Yeah.
I was kind of hard.
I don't think you can put up numbers like I put up.
No, I can't. I promise you. You don't even need to tell me that. title of this, how do you deal with inadequacy / comparison and not appreciating what you have? This is Dennis, does not list his age, but hey, Yard, I'm currently a senior at the University of British Columbia. Good school.
Great campus, beautiful campus.
Beautiful, beautiful school. And objectively, I'm in a great position in my life professionally. I have a job offer with a 6-figure salary. Yeah, Canadian. Fucking, what's that?
Nice 40K a year.
Yeah. Have fun figuring that out.
Yeah.
Have fun buying a house.
In Vancouver?
No,
are you kidding me?
This is actually a bad way to respond to this question.
It's affordable, bro.
I have a job with a 6-figure salary and I do great in school, but I often find myself feeling inadequate when I compare myself to others. My friends are even more successful and have found jobs in the U.S. I find it hard to shake this feeling of not being, quote, enough. I feel like I have little reason to feel this way. The more I look around... the more I look around, the more I struggle with the sense of inadequacy. I don't even enjoy my career. I feel like I did not live up to my potential compared to others. My question is, have you guys ever felt like this? And if so, how did you separate your own value from being what others value and start recognizing and appreciating my own journey without feeling like it pales in comparison to others? I think this is a pretty common problem. For what it's worth, let me quickly start because I made a joke about it. If you have a six-figure salary in Canada out of university, that is super rare to my understanding. So
I don't think it's rare,
there.
And I think you're fucking broke shit. And
okay.
I think you don't get bitches either.
Okay, keep that in mind,
Dennis,
then. Broke shit.
I think you got a fucking dry ass phone. I will say, Dennis, I'm 34, man. You are probably 10 years plus younger than me. I am 34. You think that I feel good about the shit I haven't done? Do you think all of my 20s that I spent doing shit that didn't result in me making a TV show, do you think I feel good about that, Dennis? You piece of shit. I don't want to hear some shit. Yet the answer is you never quite stop comparing yourself to people. I think it's very natural. But I, and this is your flavor of it, Nick is better at answering this question because it's come up a lot too, but I tend to use that energy as get it into gear. I use it as motivation to move. And that's one way to do it. And it's not out of spite. It's a little out of fear. But at the end of the day, I want to be able to achieve something that I think is cool. And people who are younger than me have already done that. And there's two things you can do. You can either give up and say, damn, I guess it's over for me. Or you can say, let's get it going. Let me get a shot. I'll give myself a shot. Right. I think you said kind of passively, you didn't even like what you do. That's a different problem, brother.
Yeah, that's separate.
That doesn't have to do because you got to figure that out. But yeah, that's my initial knee jerk.
Yeah, said, I feel like it was a different question, but I think I said this in the last episode of advice with Nick. I think I said like comparison. I just said like, you know, the cliche. Comparison is the thief of joy.
It's the thief of joy. Just like your phone.
It is. The joy thief.
It's a
joy
thief.
Wait, for you, I thought it was a JB.
That's right. Comparison is the bringer of joy for
me. Okay, comparison is the JB.
Comparison is the JB. Bitch.
Comparison is the JT. And I'm going to tell you that.
Think about Elon Musk, bro. He has billions of dollars and everyone hates him. Think about that shit, bro. It doesn't come from this shit.
And he still wants approval from
people.
And
he still needs it. I do not want to be there.
I think that's, dude, this is kind of a hard question to answer for me, because I do think it feels to me dynamic. It is like, and it also, I think I have dealt with this similarly. My measurement of myself against like other people in my life can be, whether it be like work or something like Melee, where it's competitive and it's a very direct measurement, versus like how productive I feel, versus something like even TOing that I want to pursue. Like standing out and being successful and competing and like rising to the top is like a very strong theme in so many ways in my life. And the motivation to beat other people and be the best at something, it has been a primary fuel for me personally in both good and bad ways. So like if I used an example, I did really well in school growing up, and part of the reason why I did well was not because my parents like didn't really get on my ass about like doing homework and things like that. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be, to be honest, my egotistical teenage self was like, I need to prove that I am like smarter than these like dumb fucks I'm in class with. And I am like, and I'm better than them.
That's dark energy.
And
that's common.
It's dark and evil energy. And I think that ego and like level of comparison, and it had the upside of like fueling success in a lot of avenues. But when I failed, I feel like it was crushing. Like failing was like particularly hard, and like grading down my ego in kind of the time like I was in college or like right after college was like a really important thing for me, where I kind of like, I realized like getting rid of a lot of my ego, and in the process, I think I lost some like self-confidence too, was important to me. And I think it's like, it's tough to find the balance between like comparison being this driver that gets you to do things while also like not making you sink into this hole of feeling inadequate.
I also think that there's a saying at when you're like fighting or when you're like boxing or shit like that, at the gym, there is always someone who's going to be stronger than you.
Yeah.
And if you're the strongest guy at your gym, there's a guy who's stronger than you at another gym. There is always going to be someone better.
There's always a bigger fish.
There literally is always someone who's going to mug.
Yeah,
and
always.
If you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh, that guy mugs me, it's like, well, someone mugs him. And like, you are to pursue that idea of mugging, it really is fruitless, because it doesn't result in anything unless you literally become the best at something in the world.
Being overly indulgent. And then even then, it's like, there's the timer on it. I think people who like all in their success on something and then become successful, but then they, especially in traditional sports, they face that transitionary period in their life where they, all of a sudden you're exiting it.
Tom Brady doesn't know what the fuck to do.
And you're too old, dude.
He doesn't know what the fuck to do with his life.
And now
he made a YouTube video.
Yeah, it's sad. and it's like my whole life was working and like doing this thing and becoming better than other people, and then all of a sudden I like, now what do I do? And I think that's the being it, allowing it to be like this vehicle for like improvement of things you want to pursue. So if we were to use the example of your work, where you have a job offer at a thing that you think you do not like or like won't want to do, it sounds like you haven't started the job yet, but you have experience doing it. Using that motivation to push in a different direction that you're more aligned with and think will be more fulfilling is good. I think a good example, like maybe a good ethos I can think of is I've noticed in sports like bouldering and like cross country, even though things are like a race or there's like a performance aspect to them, the community around those things is very uplifting and focused on like individual improvement and acknowledging and rewarding people for like personal breakthroughs rather than like measuring them against each other. Versus like, admittedly, I think in something like Melee or chess, where like in chess you might get asked like, what's your rating? Or in Valorant you might get asked like, what's your rank?
Yeah.
And in life you might be asked like, you know, what's your job? And then there's this immediate like comparative judgment that's associated with that. But then in climbing and like running, I feel like a lot of it has to do with like applauding for like PBs and things like that.
Completion.
So using motivation to basically like continue improving yourself while not like letting it like degrade your enjoyment of life is the balance to seek.
It's your job is to set goals that make you feel good and enrich your sense of self without the need for external validation, which is a very common piece of advice, but it we need to say it again, because it's like I hit Tekken King on Tekken with Nina. That was hard. And I told the guys that, and they were like, cool, that's cool. If I never told them that, I'd feel the same amount, right? I don't need them to go, nice, man. I just don't.
That was
because I did it for myself.
That's an interesting thing, too. I think you actually know when you're becoming successful at what I'm talking about when you feel more like what Slime is describing. Because one thing that's happened for me with Melee is I feel like Melee is a good representation of this, because I've now played Melee through so many different parts of my life that I can evaluate like how the other parts of me kind of interact with it. And I think now the personal breakthroughs are so much more meaningful to me as an individual. But when I started playing, acknowledgement and respect from other people were so much more important.
It's all you wanted. Even as a shitter. Yeah. Especially as a shitter.
But now I think that acknowledgement is like, it's way more similar to Slime, where like if somebody says like, oh, good job, or like I thought it was like, hey, nice job doing this, it feels nice, but I've done most of the legwork for myself of like whether or not that experience feels rewarding. And I think that shift, if you can notice that shift in the way you like look at and analyze things, it can be in the way you look. It can be in the way you like socialize with people. You need to make progress in these things that you care about that you can like kind of pat yourself on the back about and be genuinely happy with, without relying on the acknowledgement of others to like to support the feeling.
Yep.
Getting compliments from people will always feel nice. That will always be a nice thing, but having it not be essential to the positive feeling of like improving something or getting better at something is really important, I think.
The litmus test is, would I feel good about this if no one knew?
If no one knew. Ooh,
and
yes.
And if the answer is, yeah, I would feel good about that. That's a great goal.
That's fucking awesome.
And the answer is no, then you gotta think about that. Think about why.
I think, what else was I gonna say? I think there's also, I don't know, I think there is a truth to just getting older and feeling more comfortable with yourself. I don't have a process for you, but I feel like it is so much easier for me to just settle on, not settle in terms of like settling for a bad option, but literally like settle with a feeling about myself or things just aren't as big of a deal emotionally as they were when I was younger, you know?
Yeah.
I don't really care if I wear like funny sweatpants to coffee anymore.
Right.
And I remember this. I actually first I thought about this because I thought this like change came when I moved to LA actually. And like not necessarily because of COVID, but we would just go get like coffee or food like all the time, right? And I would just like put on like some like fucking terrible t-shirt and my like sweatpants with a hole in them that say smash on the ass.
Yeah.
And I would never do that when I was 19.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And so just that like social comfort and like being more happy with who you are in your life, maybe not happier, but being more comfortable mm-hmm. with yourself will happen as you get older, in my opinion.
As long as you don't stay weirdly obsessed with like the evil, the happy castle, is that what you're talking about? The scary castle is becoming Elon Musk.
Yeah, this is okay. And this, sorry, you actually reminded me of the last thing I wanted to add to this. This is the thought exercise I use a lot now, and it has helped me a ton as somebody who like, used to want to buy like, used to want to buy like nice clothes. And I think I still buy and like wear nice clothes now. But the reason I buy those things, or the types of clothes I buy, or like the car I bought, or me and Nick had this conversation of like, I'm in a very fortunate spot, right? I might be able to buy like a quote super nice car. And like part of me was like, oh, what, you know, what are these? Like, what do I like? What could I get? Like, da 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 da. And like this arms race of acquiring more like money or doing more things in your life or acquiring more like material things, especially, but this can apply to like a spectrum of like emotion and like stuff in your career as well. I think you should think about will having that thing actually remove or satiate this feeling? Because something that I think about all the time is how I'll use the car as the example because it's the most straightforward, is if I get this car and I pay all this money for it, will I stop having the feeling of like wanting this other car
right.
and like wanting this other car?
Yeah, yeah.
Will it permanently satisfy this feeling of like having this nice thing to like have and show off in my life? And the answer with the car is no. It's a fucking dumb purchase. There is no reason, especially in my current financial position, where like buying a really nice car would actually be like, it would be hard for me to just rip a purchase on a car like that. But I'd have to like find a way to do it,
right.
I could say.
Yeah.
And if I did that, would I have that satisfaction? And then I like literally map out the mental idea of having that thing.
Yeah,
and
you
buying
live your
it
life
having
in
it
your head.
And like what it's like weeks later with that thing. And I'm like, fuck. It doesn't fix that at all. So why would I do it?
Yep.
And that has actually, this process applied over and over and over again to a lot of things in my life has actually made me have that feeling for things less, I think.
Mm.
And I don't know if it will be as satisfying to people listening to this, but that has worked really, really well for me. Something I also do is like the other, like if I were to give clothes as an example, if I find something I like, I found this jacket that I like. I just bought this jacket.
You wear jackets inside all the time.
Because,
weird.
I usually find something and then I'll think about it for like, I'll try to sit on it for like a month. And then if I still want that thing like a month later and I think it'll just
that's a good technique. Yeah.
And then if I be, and it usually means that I will just be happy to have the thing. And that's true.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to have the thing. Sure. And I really like
it. You like
it.
Your jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm happy I have this jacket, not because of like what it says to other people. It's just like, I like this jacket and the way it like looks on me. And I like that it's pink.
Yeah.
And I think I like this jacket. And I didn't used to be like this. I did not used to think about things this way. And I realized that I was like caught in this, like, I will never be satisfied if I keep pursuing things in this way. And it's separating the like stuff you only want to push forward for the sake of like that comparative reason versus using the comparative reason for things that you like and using that to push your those avenues or improvements for that thing. Separating those two things is really good, I think.
Yeah.
That was my last thing that I want to say. Otherwise, you end up like Elon Musk. That's the end of the food chain, right?
Dude,
he is everything a person could ever want, and he so clearly, and I do not like armchair psychoanalyzing people. He so clearly wants the attention and approval of the public and the people around him.
It's,
and it's like, dude, just that's why it's kind of why Bezos is a little based. I'm sorry. Bezos very clearly just like, I feel like, doesn't it, like, he shuts the fuck up and like got ripped. And instead of like, you know, people are unionizing and like people think I'm evil. I don't fucking care, bro. Yeah. I'm liquidating my Amazon stock and I fucked my friend's like wife. And
it's crazy.
To be clear, not a good person. Do not model yourself after Jeff Bezos. But if you were to compare these two people, it's like weird that Elon Musk, it's like, who has the world at his fingertips, so is like in the worst possible version of like what you're describing, Dennis. And
in a lot of ways, Bezos probably too. I always thought it was crazy that he fucked his best friend's wife.
Yeah, he probably has other because
it's
similar,
like it's the
know.
One thing
he couldn't buy. Yeah. So maybe you're right. Maybe but Bezos quietly has problems.
I get what you're saying though, and I think it's a good point. And the disease of more is something you'll be fighting off your whole life because that's the system that we've built.
Yes.
Just stamp that shit out right now. Find out what makes you happy. Do that. Do not attach it to material items because this is just basic advice.
He's a good example, and I don't think everybody can copy this model because I think he is a rather unique individual. But I went on a hike with Ken Chen this morning. I woke up at 7 a.m. to go on a hike
with Ken Chen.
Yes.
Blood didn't ask me for shit.
You want to go on a hike at 7 a.m. with Ken Chen?
I'll say that much.
Yeah. So me, Ken Chen, Hotbed, go on a hike. And we're just talking about what his life is like right now. Because he's basically like, I don't know, Ken's like 41, 40.
No, he's like, maybe he is.
He's at least 40.
Jesus Christ, I think he's 40.
I think he turned 40 like a year or two ago. So he's 41 or 42. But Ken is in, Ken's 41. He's in a very, I'm going to quickly acknowledge this. He's in a very privileged circumstance without elaborating. And he's basically retired.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because he's in his early 40s. He's in like some of the best shape of his life. And he doesn't have a wife or girlfriend. He doesn't have kids. He doesn't want either of those things. And he's like also the happiest I've ever seen him. And it's like, how does this man occupy, how does he as a man occupy his time and actually have like such a satisfied, like happy life? And he was walking me through like what his expenses are at the moment. And he only spends, he's like done the math basically. He spends $30,000 a year right now to live.
Yeah, Ken famously just always wore like old esports merch or like single block color t-shirts.
Yeah, and he is so happy and satisfied with like where he's at in life. And like one of his big things is he just wants to spend a lot of time with his parents right now before they die.
Yeah. And getting old. And he is. He goes on trips with them and shit.
Yeah, he just goes and hangs out with his parents for like a month at a time, and they live on like the opposite coast or whatever. But I just thought about that a lot. It's like, here's this guy who has the means to do a lot more.
Yeah.
He could have a more, at least in the short term, much more extravagant life. And he doesn't. He doesn't date. He doesn't want kids. He just spends time with his mom and dad and his friends and like it is basically like trying to put time into like personal relationships and like plays Path of Exile and a shit ton of disc golf. Fun fact, if you play disc golf, Ken is like one of the best. He's like in the top cut of like people in his age bracket. It's crazy.
He's such an achiever.
Yeah. He just grinds. He likes picking a thing to
games,
grind.
He works on himself. He works out. He spends time with his family. His small family.
Yeah, he does push-ups.
Yeah, and none of this has to do, like, he just has the time to do it because of the money.
Yeah, but and I'm not saying, like, most people need, like, a fucking job. They need to work a job. They need to do these. But all I'm saying is, like, Ken is one of the most self-satisfied people I know, and he lives a very simple life. And I think he's kind of, like, locked into that. And I think part of that is, like, he doesn't care what other people think at all. And separating yourself from that can be like super rewarding.
Ken famously, I brought this up before, he has said he's not even the most famous Ken Chen because the guy he went to college with started Blue Apron.
Holy fuck.
Yeah, he never told you that?
That's fine.
He's not even the best, the most successful Ken Chen.
Brutal.
He had to live that, right? And he's like, you know what? That's how it is sometimes.
That's how it is.
And so, yeah, man. I mean, we've kind of waffled on about this, but I think it's such a universal problem. And I think they were doing this shit in Mesopotamia as well, bro. Like, some people have better harvests, and you're like, well, why does Grug have better harvests than me?
Why Grug harvest. Grug. Grug. His wife so breast so
wife
big.
Breast so so
her
large.
Breast so big.
My wife breast so middle medium.
Real. Real shit. Real shit hours.
Real spill.
Real shit hours. Giving you the most fucking dumb fuck piece of advice of all time that I think is super basic but is worth reminding. Dude, I actually think deleting or not using social media, but Instagram specifically is...
You think that helps?
I think it helps.
That's so interesting.
I think not spending time on social media helps a lot.
Or just make it all about animals. You can craft your algorithm pretty good.
If you need, but that takes some effort.
My
you know?
Instagram is half beautiful women, half monkeys.
I think Instagram for a lot like whether you, I think you can only do so much proactive defensive work on this problem. And there are things that will like break through and force you. Cause I think there's a part of like our animal brains that are built to compare because it's like a survival mechanism, you know? And scrolling on Instagram through like people's best representations of themselves is like gonna damage you no matter like how healthy you are if you do it all the time.
True.
And I watched, and this is not great, I watched this like fucking like fitness TikTok recently. And it's a dude who's like, you know, of course he's fucking jacked. Like it's like they all are. But he showed, he's like, this is me, like, after my pump, and, like, me flexing.
Flexing.
With lighting.
Haven't eaten, lighting.
Yeah. And then he still has the pump, and he walks over to a different part of his gym, and he's like, this is me sitting down in bad lighting. And he just sits, like, normal, and he still looks fine, but his, like, tummy sticks out a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, and he just, like, you know, he looks way less good. And it's like this.
It is crazy.
And it was just this, like, I know, I already know this, like, in a practical sense, right? But the visual reminder that, like, oh, this dude and, like, all of the others are just, like, this is so fucked. Like,
yeah,
it gives
bro.
You such a distorted idea of, like, what you could actually be like.
I know. And it's you can't do that forever.
Yeah.
Like, Zac Efron was just dehydrated the whole time shooting the movies. Because if you dehydrate, your muscles pop the fuck out.
You can't be like that, man.
I can't,
dude. You can't be like that for real. So anyway, just like, I think social media also just forces you to engage with this like catered, presentable version of a ton of people. And that like, if you spend a lot of time on it, it passively degrades this type of thing.
Yeah. So you got a lot of screen time. You better do something with it, Dennis, you pussy. Pissing me off. Also, you don't like your job, you gotta figure that out. Different thing. All right, we got time for one more caller. Caller coming in hot. We got time for one more.
Slime, I'm getting a memo here. The title, it's coming in Morse code, weirdly enough, and it's
interesting.
Oh, okay. Okay. I just gotta listen for a bit because it's still going. I believe that's a can I make a quote? I didn't know you could do quotes with that.
That's so new. So that's,
can you quote peg me
new
PowerPoint?
Patch. New patch. can you?
Can I make a peg me PowerPoint?
What is that?
From Anonymous.
All right.
We'll find. Okay.
I'm interested.
I'll click that. 27. Hey guys, avid listener of all the yard shows, and I know how boring the quote just communicating questions can get, so I promise that's not the case here.
Okay.
Some background. My wife and I have been married for about a year now. We are good at communicating for the most part. I have ADD and autism, so I often have trouble understanding others' perspectives and very often do a bad job of explaining my own. I'm good at masking when I'm in a situation I'm familiar with, but crumble in new scenarios. It is not uncommon for me to go nonverbal for seconds or minutes at a time, trying to construct my thoughts to make sure I'm not misconstrued or just straight up say something I don't mean. My wife is bisexual. I am straight and also a chic main, so I enjoy some butt stuff in my free time. She knows this, but we haven't explored that together. I want to make sure I effectively make my desires known and also have them taken seriously. So here's my question. Is it too silly to make a PowerPoint? Is it going to make it seem too much like a joke? Could this be demeaning to her in some way? If a PowerPoint is too silly, what other methods could I use? I need something to guide me, and I like making PowerPoints.
Yeah, you know what?
Writing,
I do too.
Writing to others is a new thing for me, so apologies if this got hit by the autism missile.
You know,
cheers, boy.
I will say this. I tend to have a very short, I have very little patience when it comes to people with, how do you say it, like a lack of social awareness, whether it be natty or whether it be autism. And I think I share that same lack of patience depending whether or not it's something that they just haven't learned or it's something that they can't control like autism. And I just want to say I appreciate you so much for being considerate, because I know it takes a lot of energy. And I know you're in a position where you have to do it because, you know, you were just born a different way and that sucks. But the fact that you put so much effort into being considerate, into thinking how you're being construed to neurotypical people is very admirable, and I appreciate that. I think that's cool. And second, you're really funny, and I like that. You know how Slime thinks. When you're funny, everything's good. Everything's all good, brother. So no, you didn't hit us with the autism missile, but if you did, I think it'd be okay. I think
this is so fun. It's
an interesting one because you know your wife better than we do.
Yeah.
Like, maybe she is the kind of person that would be receptive to a PowerPoint.
I'm gonna be honest. When I told my dad I was not gonna be a doctor and I was gonna work in esports, I made a PowerPoint.
You did?
Yeah.
That's beast.
And
when I wanted to work for Ludwig, I made a PowerPoint.
You made a PowerPoint.
I think the big moments in our lives, the big things.
Brought to you by Microsoft PowerPoint.
Brought to you by Microsoft PowerPoint. But it's like
I was using Google Slides.
We crave like this idea of like a structure and an introduction and a walkthrough of something that's important to us. And it sounds like this is important to you.
I think that honestly, I like he said, I don't know your wife. I wish I did.
She sounds lovely.
But
she's cheating on you, maybe.
But she could be. No, I'm just kidding. That's out of pocket. No, I just mean I have a hard time imagining being on the receiving end of this PowerPoint and not thinking it is incredibly funny and endearing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the person you love the most in your life and you've already had sex and you're like this, it sounds like it can only be a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
And talk about, especially if it's presented in a PowerPoint. The irony is already there.
Yeah.
And then if it leads to you getting pegged by the woman you love, like,
oh, that's I'm the American sorry. Dream. I'm sorry. Is it only winners in this room right now? Fucking. I didn't know. We're at the high roller table all together. Me, Slime, you, your wife. We're winning. And
table's hot.
Table's
just
so hot.
Just hottest table in the damn casino. I think that, again, you know her better. If there's any doubt in your mind that she might not be receptive to it, then, I don't know, evaluate that doubt. But, you know, you're with her for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wish I knew her.
Wish I...
If only to answer your question better.
Yeah. But I think you should make it, and best of luck.
I think, you know what? Let's not be centrists for once. Just do it.
Just make it. Just make it,
and do it, and update us in the Discord if you feel like it. I you know what? Just fucking ship it, bro. Because you know what? You know what my old boss told me way back? He said, no is the second best answer you can get. So jot that shit down.
Wow. Yeah, I can't argue with that. All right, good luck getting pegged.
All right, well, that's our time, guys. I hope you enjoyed the advice show. This was your moment of brilliance, brought to you by Peter Tepetidagger. This is your moment of brilliance.